Some years ago, I attended a Thanksgiving Eve party with young adults where we went around the room and told what we wanted to do when we grew up. I was already grown up, but I still played and said, this is what I want to do when I grow up. Many different careers were named: teaching, airplane piloting, firefighting, even TV game show hosting. That was interesting. I commented then on how differently I would expect a different demographic group to respond, say a group of Russians or those young people in Africa. My point was that this country is blessed with an economic and cultural climate which affords an endless array of choices. And therefore, we can speak, even if dreamily, of many aspirations. And often it's a lot more than just dreaming, isn't it? We can chart a course of education or training that will qualify us to realize those dreams. Many of the young participants really expected to reach their goals, and many of them, I'm certain, did. Just as maybe you did, or you are doing. Recently, I've also been thinking about how our choices begin to be narrowed. Age, marriage, more responsibility, narrow our choices about a lot of things. And for some people, that is very depressing. What about you? Narrow choices? What should you do? The scriptures teach us that circumstances which dictate our array of choices must never be allowed to determine our ultimate success in life, or even our happiness. Is such an offer too good to be true? Life as we live it, inevitably, circumstances will come that we do not have the freedom of choice that we once did. Is that to be lamented or used to God's glory? One choice is always available. What is it? Serve God and love Him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And serve and love others. That's what it means to love them as you would yourself. It's always available. Does that fill us with a sense of power and of optimism and hope to be able to face the circumstances of our lives inevitably, which will narrow our choices? God wants us to look at it that way, I believe. You see, we were created to choose. Do you realize that? We were created to make choices. Man from the beginning was given the ability to make moral choices. He could either obey or disobey God. The ability to choose defines to a large degree, maybe even really ultimately and principally, what it means to be a human, to make a choice. Now, I know there have been many animal studies that will suggest that animals choose like we do, but the ones I've read indicate that's just not so. It's very difficult to ever confidently say through any type of research that I've been privy to that animals, for instance, contemplate their death. They just live out their life. I've enjoyed, not recently, I don't know how I got out of the habit, I think I lost where the channel was where we could find it, but I enjoyed watching the fellow who was the dog whisperer I don't think that's what he called him, Milan. What is his first name? Caesar Milan. And one thing that he emphasized again and again, a dog's going to be a dog. Cat's going to be a cat. We get all concerned that we've hurt their feelings, and he tries. What he does is he helps the humans in the way that they treat their animals. He said, you're treating them like a human. Treat them like a dog. They live in the moment. You know, they're not carrying around, Dewey doesn't carry around, John swatted me because I bit him. You know, and sometimes he does bite me. If I don't do what he wants, and I swat him and he runs. Well, he deserved it. I'm trying to teach him not to do that, to know success whatsoever that I can judge, except he doesn't do it like he used to. But there's no evidence that he pouts about it or feels bad. I think, did I hit him too hard? I don't want to warp his little personality. He ain't thinking about any of that. But we do. We do. I'd be willing to bet if we went around the room, each of us could recall in our youth some extremely embarrassing, guilty, hurtful, shameful thing. That quick. There's no evidence that any other creature does that. And it flows out of our moral ability to make choices. We say, man, I shouldn't have made that decision. I shouldn't have done that. That was stupid, or that was immoral, or that was terrible, or whatever. Sometimes we are asked, why didn't God make us so we couldn't sin? Sounds like utopia? Two questions. Do you really want to give up your right to choose? That's what you're saying when you say, well, why didn't God make it so we couldn't sin? If you can't sin, if you can't do wrong, you can't choose. It kind of takes away from doing right, doesn't it? If that's your only choice. Secondly, do we really want to give up love? He said, well, what do you mean? Love demands a choice. That's what love is. It's choosing to do something for another person of your own free will. You don't call it love when you hold a gun to somebody's head and say, do something for me. That's loving. That isn't love. It's coercion. And in essence, that's what Satan charged God with doing. Well, really bribing. He said, you're bribing Job. That's why he serves you. God says, no, he'll serve me for nothing, and I'll prove it. Take away all he's got. He'll still serve me. He'll still honor me. And Job did, even though he had many struggles and doubts. So, if there's no choice, then there is no love. No, I don't want that world. I don't want that. And I don't think anybody really, when they think through that scenario, they do either. Choice has reverberating consequences for good or for evil. Note this statement from Deuteronomy 5, 6 through 10. I am the Lord your God. God is talking through Moses to the people. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. That's what I did for you. Therefore, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and on the third and the fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. What is God saying? There are consequences to our choices. First for us, but possibly even more disturbing for our children, our grandchildren, our great-great-grandchildren, our great-great-great-grandchildren. Consequences for the moral choices we make, for good or for evil. But look at the flip side of that. Oh, you say, well, I really don't want to affect my legacy or my progeny in a deleterious way. Of course not. So let's affect them in a positive way. Let's give them something that encourages them, that spurs them on, that sets a standard to be achieved. Both are by the hand of the Lord. We must accept the responsibility to choose wisely and accept the consequences when we do not. Now let's say just a little bit about that. I think that the harder thing to do is to accept consequences of sinful behavior. But there will be that. I think every mature person in this audience probably knows that, has experienced that. Now, is the power of God sufficient to use those bad choices to His glory? That means that even though I am ashamed and feel guilty of what I've done in the past, I don't have to carry it as a rock that will weight me down and defeat me. God can use it. Now, in my own personal life, it's kind of a redundant statement, isn't it? In my own life, which is personal, I have seen that. I've seen it in that I have insight into circumstances and situations where I can warn others, don't go there. Now, I'd like to tell you that that is the ultimate way to help people. Some people listen, most people don't. But you could see how that brings forth good. Of steering others away from a path. I've been to at least 2 AA meetings, I was not a member, but I would go if I had that problem. But I went with other people to help them to go. And that basically is one of the messages that comes through. Here's what to avoid. Most recently, we were at the prison, and they were having a Toastmasters meeting there, and the fella gave a Toastmasters speech. He talked about how he ended up in prison. And he said, when I was 8 years old, I drank one beer. And I was hooked. That's what he said. And now I'm here. Because I made that choice. Now, if we had the opportunity to interview him, we might see, well, there's some other choices that you made along the way. But that was his perspective. He was saying that as a warning. Watch out. And if you believe him, and I did, that's credible, isn't it? He has great credibility. He's been through that. That can be a step. People who struggle with difficult problems can be a strong witness for good in that they have credibility. Further, some choices that were made by those who made the who's who of heaven, what were they? Remember Hebrews 11? I want to go over the choices that some of these made that are listed there in this who's who of heaven. I think that if the scriptures were written in our century, I think that some people that I've known would make this list, this who's who of heaven. because of the choices that they have made. Abel did what? He offered a better sacrifice. He didn't have to. He wasn't forced to. He did it by choice. He made the better sacrifice than his brother Cain. And he was called by faith. He did that. And by faith, Abraham went out not knowing where he was going. He didn't have to do that, but he chose to do that. Faith empowered him or compelled him and allowed him to make a choice that, to a lot of people, I'm sure around about, made no sense at all to them. You're doing what? Where are you going? Well, I don't quite know. You're giving up this good land? Yeah, we're moving. By faith, Abraham lived as an alien in the land of promise. If you study the record there, that land of promise was not quite what you would think as the promised land. They had warlike people in it. They had a drought in it, a famine in it, and just on and on. Struggle after struggle. But he lived in it as an alien, as a foreigner in his land. By faith, Abraham offered up Isaac. How could you ever get the consent of your mind to kill one of your children? Yeah, and the only one you got. And it's the one that God said would be the one through whom he would fulfill all of his promises to you. How would you ever get the consent of your mind to do that? Was Abraham nuts? Listen to some of the agnostic and atheistic TV people, I've heard this once or twice, and that's one of the situations they cite, that the Bible is just nonsense. They got a story of a guy in there who wants to kill his son to serve God. And I had one fellow say, I don't believe that any person who calls himself a Christian really believes the Bible. And someone said, what do you mean? He said, every Christian that I've ever met, I've asked him this one question. If God told you to kill your son, would you do it? And I had to found a one that would. Would you? If God told you to kill your child, would you do it? I hope I would answer this way if I were ever asked that question and I was ever in that circumstance. Yes, I would if I really believed it was God who was telling me. How was Abraham able to do that? Hebrews 11, if you read a little bit further, gives you this clue. He believed that God would raise him from the dead. Isn't that something? That a man's faith in the goodness and the character of God said, if God told me to kill him, I must. And God told me, and he knew he had. And God told me that this is the son through whom I'm going to fulfill all my promises. And that means, necessarily inferred, that means God's going to raise him. But the scripture says he received him back as one from the dead, because Abraham had decided to kill him. He was going to do it, and he would have done it if God hadn't stopped him. Decision had been made. The decision was made when it says, the text says, after God told him to kill Isaac, says he got up early to go do the Father's will. I've often pondered that text and think, I think I would have slept a little later that day. Just think, well, maybe God will change his mind. Let me wait for the next conversation. Maybe he'll amend that. Now, that wasn't the first time that Abraham had ever spoken to the Lord. They had been having conversations right along. Not every day, not every year, but throughout his life. He had several. So he knew it was God. and he knew what he said. By faith he did that. He made a choice. By faith Moses chose to suffer ill treatment with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of Egypt. I wonder if that was a hard choice for him. Had to have been hard on some level. He was a man. He could see the plight of the people of God and how they were being treated, and he knew that if he joined with them, he would be either treated that way or maybe even worse because he had been regarded as a traitor. He chose to suffer ill treatment with the people of God. He made a choice. Then note this choice. This is the result of a life of choosing. I love this passage because I'm closer to the end than I've ever been before. You know what? So are you. Even though you may be very young, you're closer. But look at Paul's statement reflecting a life of choosing God. Choosing God. 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 8. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering. That means he's dying. But when he phrases and describes death as a drink offering, what is he saying? Now just imagine, get the metaphor in your mind, that they would have drink offerings that they would pour, usually wine, they would pour into the flame. And you know that it got alcohol in it, so it flames up. So they pour it. But note, there is a finite end. You can only pour so much, and then it's over. And they're doing it because God commanded it to the glory of God. Now, can we look at our lives as a drink offering that's being poured out to the glory of God? If so, we can anticipate and glorify the fact that there will be an end. I'm being poured out as a drink offering. Next. And the time of my departure has come. This word departure comes from a word that means to get on a ship, to go on a long journey, to disembark, or to, I should say, embark. To embark. Get on the ship and go. I'll never forget the last conversation I had with one of my mentors, Homer Haley, Jeff's grandfather. This was within a week, maybe a week and a half, of his death. He had already told me that on his refrigerator, and I had seen it when I visited him, he had already posted everything that was to be done and not done. He wasn't to be taken to the hospital. He wasn't to be placed in any type of medical facility. He was to be allowed to die right there in his bed. And he had that, I've read it, his directive. It's kind of sobering, you know. And we talked about it. So I called him up, and he said, John, I'm packing my bags. Said, the end is near. I'm packing my bags. I'm getting ready, as Paul said, to embark, to get on that ship and go across the divide between life and the other world, on the other side. And I said, I bet you know, I didn't know what to say. But that has never stopped me from saying something. And I said, well, I bet you can pack light. He said, you know, John, you're right. I think I'll just stop packing. I'm ready. I want to be there. Some days I think I am. Really. You say, well, John, I'm not there. Well, you're on a different journey. You will be if you stay on it. You know what happens to your life? When you lose the distraction of feeling good every day and wanting to jump over the moon and run here and do that, when you lose that distraction, you start focusing on other things. I saw that happen to myself when I finally had to accept, John, your body simply cannot play every game at camp and survive and not pay for it for a month. So you've got a choice to make. Either you quit playing and just watch. I can't watch very easily, so I just go do something else because I want to play. You have a choice to make. You either keep playing and hurt, or you stop playing and feel better. So you can do other things. But as you start doing other things, you're less distracted by the physical and more able to focus on the spiritual. Because there's really just two sides of you, physical and spiritual. And the less you can focus on the physical, the more you can focus on the spiritual. The problem with pain is it drives you to focus on the physical. C.S. Lewis wrote a whole book about it. And that's his primary premise. Well, who can help us to get our mind off the physical when we're hurting? God can. Because he has a greater capacity to hold our mind and our thoughts and our spirit. So, Paul is saying, I'm getting ready to embark. I fought the good fight. How? He made the right choices. When push came to shove, and he was forced either to fight the good fight or flee and turn tail and run, he stood there and fought the spiritual fight. We have to as well. We have to make that choice. I have finished the course. How could he say that? He chose to not quit. And we have that choice. We can either quit or we can continue. We continue the course. Continue to run the course. Further, I have kept the faith. How? He made a choice to keep the faith, meaning to keep his own faith and to keep faith with the Lord. I've kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness. Why? Choices I make. There is a crown for those who make the choices. Which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Why? Because that's what you chose, how you chose to live your life. Choosing God is always right and trumps all other choices. It is always available to us. Choosing God means that we choose to do what he has revealed for us to do in all things and in all circumstances, as a single man or as a single woman. We have choices. As a married person, as a parent or as a child, as an employee or as an employer. That means when we're pressed by economic factors and economic considerations, we have a choice. We have a choice. Do we choose our economic well-being and even put it higher than our well-being with the Lord? Members of a local church have a choice. to engage in activities that will support their leadership and follow them and encourage them and to encourage one another, we have a choice. That's part of choosing God. As citizens in the country, we have a choice as to what we shall do and how we shall do it. God uses both good and evil choices to accomplish His plan for us. The whole Bible is full of that. The cross cannot be understood without the premise or the principle that God can use evil to bring forth good. It will help us to make all the other lesser choices of life if we choose first to serve God. I do not believe it can be empirically demonstrated, or it is so to say, that choosing God will cause you to be healthy. But it will help. I don't think it can be empirically demonstrated and therefore absolutely true that choosing God will enable you to prosper economically in all circumstances, but it will help. Otherwise, we could not understand the statement of Matthew 6, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these other things shall be added unto you." And the other things are material things. The reason that many people do not have very many things and do not prosper is because they have not put God first. That does not argue that we choose God to be rich, but we choose God because He is God, and God chooses to prosper us, or if we do not prosper as much, normally we do not prosper as much as we would like. That's another matter. But God cares for His own, and He will care for us. David said, "I have not ever seen the righteous suffer from hunger." I don't think that's an absolute statement. It's just a general principle of how God works. In conclusion, honor your God-given ability to choose by choosing God. We conclude with this thought. An omnipotent God, just meaning a God who can do anything, chooses not to do at least one thing. There's several things, but there's, in this case, there's one thing He will not do. He will not override your will. Now, at some point, the time for choosing is past. The door is shut, and it will not be open. No more choice. It's consequence time. And we're living in a culture that has a difficulty accepting that premise. If we're late with the paper, we convince the teacher to take it later than the deadline. If we miss the test, we can go and somehow appeal it, and they'll give it to us again. If we're late to work, it's okay. If we miss that deadline, miss this deadline, miss that, even the IRS, you can make an appeal and file an extension. God, with God, deadlines are important. And they're fixed. I don't know when they are. Do you? No one does. Christ said He didn't know. I don't quite understand how that's possible, but that's what He said, and so I take Him at His word. Of the time when everything will say, okay, that's it. Time of choosing is over. Consequence time. But we understand the principle. As many of you know, I'm getting ready to go to a camp, and we got 381 kids, and some of whom have filed all their forms, some have not. So we communicated and said, if it's not in here by then, it's over. We're not going to adjust it. But I will, if I were a betting man, when we get to camp, we're going to have a line that says, I'd like to call my parent to get them to send that form over here. And I've already instructed the secretary, the answer is no. We stated it again and again. We reminded you twice. You missed it. Apparently, that's the lesson that needs to be learned, you see. So I feel like we're doing them a favor. Getting them ready to deal with a much more punctual person than I am. But you know that's going to happen. It's not going to happen with God. But let's, while we can choose, let's choose wisely. And thank you for coming tonight. From my vantage point, of course, this could be self-serving. I think you chose wisely to come. And I hope you are benefited from what we have thought about, what we've sung about heaven. I have a question about one of the songs. A rose is blooming there for me. Other than it's just a beautiful situation. If you have a biblical reference on that, I'd like to know it. Not that I'm questioning the song. Maybe. I thought of that. But, point taken, we had a choice. I hope there are good consequences for your choice and that we can help others of our brethren to so choose. Thank you for listening. Now you have a choice to respond to the gospel or ask for prayers or any other thing that we can assist. Let's come. Let's stand and sing.